Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 19th of March. New research done by our guest this hour challenges a long-held belief about older citizens being more rigid. Findings published in the October 2007 edition, but coming to light now because of the presidential race. This was in the American Sociological Review in an article titled Population Aging, Intra-Cohorts Aging and Sociological Attitudes. It was based on social survey data from 25 surveys between 1972 and 2004 that measure the changes in attitudes that occur within cohorts at different stages of life. They looked at the political leanings of 46,510 Americans, examined with regard to how they felt about the political and economic roles of historically subordinate groups, the civil liberties of groups considered outside the U.S. mainstream, atheists and homosexuals, and privacy issues, right to die, and sex between consulting adults. We'll talk about the results with one of the authors of the study. Professor Nicholas Danigelis is chair and professor in the Department of Sociology at the University of Vermont. He did some teaching at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in the 1970s and has fond memories of his time there. His teaching specialties are research methods and statistics, gerontology, and race relations. He says his research interests have been an eclectic mix over the course of his career, but a sustaining theme has been an unyielding interest in the nature of the different kinds of ties that bind individuals to society. His research does not speak specifically to the current political campaign. It does address and contradict the conventional stereotypes of older people becoming more set in their ways or more conservative as they age. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Professor Danigelis. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050, or send an email if you'd like, and that's talk@wpr.org. Professor Danigelis, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Welcome, and thank you for having me.
You were at Madison in the early 70s?
Yes, I was. Directly out of graduate school, I went to UW, my first job, and if it weren't for the pull of coming back home to Vermont, where I was born and brought up, I'd like to think I would still be there. I don't think I would be in any rooting any more strongly than I am for the Badgers in the upcoming NCAA tournament, because my Indiana Hoosiers probably are going to exit early.
Right.
But yes, we did. My wife and I did spend about 3 years in Madison, and do have indeed fond memories. If I could,
sure.
I do want to acknowledge the critical contribution of my two co-authors,
yes.
Melissa Hardy, who is Distinguished Professor of Human Development, Sociology, and Demography at Penn State University, and Steve Cutler, who's the Bishop Robert F. Joyce Distinguished Professor of Gerontology at the University of Vermont. If you or your faithful listeners find any problems with our research, I will be sure to shift as much of the blame as I can onto them. In all seriousness, this was a joint project, and I was very proud to have them as co-authors.
And what an interesting project. Where did we get this commonly held belief about older people being rigid and unwilling to change?
Well, I think there probably are a variety of sources, but sadly, it seems to me one of the most significant ones is what we might think of as the evidence of our own eyes. That is, if we look at two people, any two people that you know, one of whom is young, the other of whom is old, you're likely to observe some clear-cut differences. Starting, for example, if you're dealing with a very old person who's in frail health, lack of physical flexibility, a rigidity, if you will, of posture, whereas the young person is probably doing cartwheels, or at least could, presumably. We take those snapshot pictures of two different individuals at different ages, and we presume that, and this is, of course, the very great leap of faith, or if you will, faithlessness, we make the very great leap of faith that the difference must be accounted for by the fact that the older person was like this all the time, and has therefore not changed in a significant way. Or if we do think that they've changed, and we acknowledge the logic of getting frail as one gets older and having difficulty with senses and so forth, we then tack on to that what we think of as the logical connection to their emotional and their psychological state.
Mm-hmm.
And so, especially if we find that that older person is, in fact, more conservative, let's say, than the younger person, then we assume it's because they've aged. What we neglect to think about is the possibility that that older person grew up in a different time, was socialized into different values, more conservative ones, for example, and as a result has a history, a biography, if you will, that is rather different from the younger person. We also neglect to consider what are also called period effects, that is, significant events in one's life, regardless of one's age. So, for example, if somebody were alive during the Great Depression, whether as a child or an adult of any age, that experience, as we know from a lot of research, is going to have a profound effect on how people feel about issues like savings, about
yes.
acquisition of material goods, and in some cases, the widely varying choice to either hold on to everything that you accumulate or not hold on to anything and divest yourself. It depends on the personality of the individual.
Mm-hmm.
In a similar way, the Vietnam War, the current war in Iraq, are all major events that have an effect on individuals and how they perceive the world around them. What my colleagues and I felt was that the so-called evidence of our own eyes that takes a snapshot look at older people and younger people may very well reflect a reality with regard to, for example, attitudes on social and political issues. But it does not necessarily follow that that attitude is reflective of increased conservatism with age or increased rigidification of outlook with age. In other words, we had not seen any evidence to look at what happens to individuals as they in fact age.
I was privileged in some ways to spend many of the final months of my father's life talking with him about World War II, where he served, and I know we're losing that generation in a great number right now. And I was always paying special attention to what his views were on the war in Iraq, what his views were on Vietnam, and took in his words with special interest because of the war that he served in that encompassed the whole world and must have been something to live through in this country. And I was wondering, he became very much anti-war during his lifetime, and I was wondering what that generation, if you've been able to study that generation, to find out what their thoughts have been and if we should take them with greater seriousness because of the enormity of that war. Do people become more peace-loving as they age?
Well, I think that's clearly true with a number of individuals as they age, especially in that generation. And again, as a sociologist who, as you said, along with my colleagues, examined tens of thousands of cases, I am a little reluctant to start throwing out anecdotal evidence, but two of the best examples I can think of are my own parents,
mm-hmm.
Whose attitudes when they were young were relatively liberal in a variety of ways, conservative in other ways, but who as they aged, especially with regard to issues involving the Vietnam War, became very, very liberal. I think you're going to find that among a lot of individuals, but we have to remember that we have individuals currently in the central administration of our government who have aged and apparently not become more peace-loving, if you will. One of the things that we're not able to do in specific is to locate differences, different reasons, if you will, for the changes that we're observing. The first thing and the primary thing that we wanted to do was to, first of all, determine whether there were any changes as people aged, because, I mean, it's almost as if we need to crawl before we can walk, before we can run, with regard to this notion of how do people's attitudes change or not change as they age. And a central finding in our study was that while we think the importance of period, what I mentioned as period effects, significant events, probably plays a role in how people have changed, one thing that our results across these three domains that you described at the beginning of the program, one thing that our results show about these three domains is that in general, as the larger population changes, so too do older people, whether it's in a liberal direction with regard to issues like socially disadvantaged groups, in particular African Americans and women, or in a more conservative direction with regard to civil liberties. We've seen change in the older segments of our samples that is by no means amenable to the usual stereotypes of rigidification of attitudes or increased conservatism.
Mm-hmm. Let's start with the issue of race, simply because we're all thinking about that, yeah, and because of the speech last night. And
yes, and he did. I would like to have modified a little bit of his speech if I could have.
Sure.
But I appreciate that Senator Obama has got to address the issue of race at this point head on, and if he is the candidate for the Democratic Party, clearly in the general election. I would love to see the race stereotypes go away. That's not going to happen, unfortunately. But the question arises whether or not today older Americans are more conservative, more liberal, or about the same as younger Americans with regard to the issues of issue of race relations.
Right.
We looked at several different indicators, and on one of the questions, or it was actually an index based on a couple of questions, where we looked at the reasons why African Americans are perceived not to be doing as well as white Americans, and the mention of what are called structural reasons or reasons due to discrimination or the lack of educational opportunity. With regard to that question, at the end of our survey in 2004, the difference in attitudes between those 60 and over and those under 40 was negligible. They were virtually the same on average. Now, on some of these other items, with regard to whether or not blacks are perceived as pushing too hard, whether whites have the right to segregate and the like, there is still a difference between older and younger people are more liberal than older people as of 2004. But what we found was that back in the beginning of the time when these questions were being asked, some of them in 1972, others a few years later, 1977, that the under 40 age group was substantially more liberal than the older age group at that time, and that the differences have declined substantially and in some cases in what we would call a statistically significant way. So it's complicated. But what we're looking at here, again, when we examine snapshots, is only part of the picture. If we look at the snapshot today and look at a couple of these items on race relations, we'll say, well, clearly older people are more conservative. And if I were a political advisor who wasn't thinking very well, I'd say, let's target those older individuals on this issue of race so that Obama's opponent, whether it's Hillary Clinton or John McCain, can make hay out of this. I think, first of all, that's unconscionable, but I'm not sure that politics, well,
it's conscionable. Exactly.
That's another topic for
it
you.
It sure is.
But what I think the political pundits need to understand is the evidence that we've uncovered shows changeability, malleability among the older generation with regard to race relations. We've seen it on all of these items that we examined. And in one item, the one I mentioned on reasons for inequality, there's virtually no difference if you look today at how older Americans feel about the reasons for race inequality and how younger Americans feel. In other cases, there is a difference. Older Americans are still more conservative, but not nearly as much as they were before.
So what changed? What's changed in the country since 1972?
Well, clearly the civil rights movement and its antecedents from the 1950s through the 1960s, we think, and again, we're speculating because there's no direct way to test this with the data that we had, but we think that the events associated with the civil rights movement had their effect either immediately or soon after, as, if you will, dominoes began to fall and legislation began to be put into practice in a variety of our institutional areas, in the economy, in politics, in education. We began to see opportunities opening up for African Americans, and I think we began to see a more tolerant attitude among white Americans, including older white Americans. That's our speculation. And again, it goes back to what we call this period effect.
We're going to welcome phone calls, much more to discuss with Professor Nicholas Danigelis. He is chair of the Department of Sociology and professor of sociology at the University of Vermont. We're talking about this commonly held belief that older people are rigid and unwilling to change, and he has found, as co-author of a wide-ranging study, that the conventional stereotypes of older people becoming more set in their ways or more conservative is simply not true. The results looked at issues related to historically disadvantaged groups, women and African Americans, civil liberties for unpopular groups like communists and atheists, and also boundaries of privacy regarding questions like euthanasia and sex outside of traditional marriage. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, If you want to send an email, you could do that as well. That's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, a 65-year-old retiring in 2008, a couple actually, will need $225,000 to cover medical costs in retirement. This is according to Fidelity Investments' latest health care cost estimate. We will talk about that issue the second hour of our program today. Phone calls for Professor Nicholas Danigelis, 800-486-8655, 414-227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. And we start with Barbara from Eau Claire. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. Interesting. Your next segment will touch on what my comment was going to be. I've heard that women become much more radical when they're older. Heard this very much stated. Could you comment on that?
We did not look at women and men separately, but what we did do was statistically control for gender and income and education and marital status, because these are characteristics that tend to be related to differential mortality at the older age group. In work that I've been doing since this study, I have not found as many differences between men and women as I thought I would find. And so I think the answer probably lies with regard to the particular issues that you might be asking about. What are they becoming more radical with regard to? I think it's fair to say that there is certainly increased liberal position among women with regard to the two gender-based issues that we looked at, women in politics and women with regard to their work roles and their family roles. But when we, in separate analyses that are not reported in our article, when we looked at men and women separately, we tended to see a trending in the same direction, a more liberal direction, as one would expect, both for women and for men. If I could share with you one piece of information
Sure.
that I found particularly startling while I was teaching my research methods class back in the late 1970s, early 1980s, there was a question in the general social survey, and if I could put in a plug for the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago, they and the Inter-University Consortium for Political and Social Research at the University of Michigan were kind enough to let us use the data from the general social survey. Okay, that's the plug. I get they'll pay for that, but I do want to acknowledge those folks who are so good in allowing use of data that they've collected. Well, if we go to an earlier general social survey, and I can't remember the exact year, but it was late 70s, early 80s, one of the questions asked that comprised the index on political gender equality has to do with the question of tell me if you agree or disagree with this statement, most men are better suited emotionally for politics than are most women.
Hmm.
Now, that might seem a little bizarre at this point. Another of the questions was, do you agree or disagree with this statement, when women should take care of running their home and leave running the country up to men? Another real wowser of a question. But if you could put yourself back 30 years, approximately half of the sample who were given the question indicated a very conservative answer. Men are more suited emotionally to politics than are women. What I found particularly fascinating and somewhat depressing, I guess, yay for my gender, too bad for yours, was that approximately half of each gender felt that way. That is, when we broke the question down by men versus women, there was no difference. I would have expected, even back in the 1970s, for there to have been a difference, for women to have poo-pooed that kind of thinking. Well, half the women did, but also half of the men did as well. So I think, although common sense tells us that we should see some real changes, and I noticed some very very feisty, very liberal, if not radical women posting on the comments section to a blog in the New York Times that Tim Egan did on changing attitudes. A lot of folks, you know, representing a very, very liberal and historically, in terms of their own biography, radicalized attitude. But I'm reluctant to generalize because so far the initial work that I'm doing is not showing those kinds of differences. But it's clearly an issue that I'm personally interested in, because I think both gender and race as master statuses, if you will, what we call master statuses in sociology, because they have such a profound effect on a variety of behaviors and attitudes that individuals have. I would expect them to be that important.
I was struck by a poll, and I can't remember where I saw this. I watch too much cable news sometimes during this presidential race. But I was struck by a poll within the last week. I don't know if you saw this, Professor Danny Jelles. The numbers were small. The percentage was small. But it was still a greater percentage of people saying they would have reservations voting for a woman. That number was higher than those having reservations voting for an African-American. It was like 5 and 10%. But I thought that was significant.
Well, I think one of the things that I think, and stop me if I go down this academic conditional road and putting up too many roadblocks to reasonable conclusions. But I do have to say that the issues on race and politics and gender and politics were only carried up through 1998, because by that time the General Social Survey found that some 95 or more percent of the sample was saying, sure, I'd vote for a woman for president, sure, I'd vote for an African American for president. And I think what we have to be careful of, I don't believe it affects our findings at all, but I think what we have to be careful of is that people, when they are being polled, may be saying one thing, but they may end up doing something else. And I think there's a great deal of concern that for both women, for both Hillary Clinton and for African Americans, Barack Obama, the numbers saying they would not vote for either a woman or an African American may very well be underestimated because of the nature of polling. Mm-hmm. And I fear that may be true. To what extent, it's hard to say. So I think whatever differences we see are interesting, but there's a larger issue that suggests that we might be underestimating the problem.
Mm-hmm. And what about, I know that you've mentioned this, but as long as we're talking about being African-American, being a woman, what about being over 70?
Well, there, of course, we've got the trifecta, don't we?
Right.
I facetiously said in my interview with Mr. Egan that for the general election, I had hopes that the age stereotype and either the race or the gender stereotypes would cancel each other out. What I meant by that is I'm hoping and praying that those stereotypes do not trump reasoned discourse and intelligent decision-making with regard to the candidates and the issues. But with regard to John McCain and your question, there really are two issues. One issue is, you know, for those people who don't like McCain, who are, if you will, liberal and Democrat, it's going to be very easy, given some of the things that he said, to portray him as a very conservative, maybe even rigid individual, which, of course, I don't like to see, given the results
right.
of our research. So he himself, I think, is going to have to address issues, whether they're brought up directly or indirectly, that speak to his flexibility in thinking. Not that people are going to ask him to be a dilettante or anything, but I think they're going to want to see some degree of non-stereotypic behavior from him. At the same time, there's the other question about age and John McCain, and that is, and that does speak to our research findings, and that is the question of whether or not older voters are going to be more inclined to support him and younger voters less inclined to support him because of their ages. And while, again, there may be some differences today between older and younger voters, the malleability of both old and young individuals over time suggests that anybody who either underestimates the importance of the senior vote or takes it for granted for one candidate or another, I think Obama would be making a horrible mistake to ignore and not, in fact, court the older vote. Anybody who misunderstands the older vote is really going to be hurting, because one thing we, of course, do know about them, that's a mistake that some of us 60-somethings make. One thing about us is we do vote an awful lot.
Yes, exactly. Thanks so much for the call. Eugene from Viola, hi.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thanks for the show. My mother and father were born in the early part of the 20th century. They came of age in the early 1930s, and both of them were pretty conservative financially throughout all their lives, even into their 70s and 80s. Well, I came of age, I was born in the late 30s, and I'm almost 70 now. I came of age in the late 50s. And at that time, when I was young, I was very liberal financially. With a job, there was a lot of jobs and a lot of money around. And I was very social, I was very conservative socially. But now, as I've gotten older, I'm very conservative financially and very liberal socially, and I'm wondering if that's a reflection of the times that my parents and also myself and my brothers grew up in.
Again, I'm speculating because our research can't uncover explanations as easily as we uncover the patterns of change that have been described. But you've almost described my older brother, who's older by 12 years and is going to be 74 next month, except that I think he's been relatively conservative financially for maybe a longer period of time. I think the Depression and either being born during the Depression or having that in your immediate past has an effect on you, but how long that effect lasts is another question. And given the changes that we've seen in our country with regard to the way our central government has operated financially, I think that it's a mistake to try to be too determinate in suggesting what the reasons for change are. But what you've done is you have just given us another indication of change over time.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Eugene, very much for your call. Joe from Kenosha, hi.
Hi there. How are you?
Fine. How are you, Joe?
Oh, pretty good.
Good.
Actually, while we're doing this, my son and I are loading a motorcycle. But anyway, I've been against the war in Vietnam, and I'm against this stupid war, too. Maybe it's just because I'm against all wars. All wars are dumb, except for the World War II, where my parents fought because they were trying to stop Hitler and that kind of thing. And my dad was a top turret gunner in a B-17, and my mom worked for the RAF and that kind of thing, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
But I haven't changed my views. I'm just against war, and maybe I'm a bit on the liberal side, but I've always been that way, and I haven't changed, and maybe that lack of change is part of growing old, I guess.
Well, no. Joe, I like what you're saying, except that last comment. I don't think it represents a lack of change necessarily, because if you think about some of the information some of the questions that we looked at, one thing was very clear, that on some issues, there didn't seem to be much change either for the older or for the younger individuals. In particular, for example, civil liberties for militarists, people who want to overthrow the country, should we let their books be in the library, should we let them speak, should we let them teach in universities and colleges? There really wasn't much change over time for either the younger age group or the older age group. On the other hand, in terms of gender and race issues, we saw dramatic changes for both groups in a liberal direction. But if you look at issues related to tolerance, for example, of premarital sex, for both older and younger individuals, change was in a conservative direction. Hmm. So I think it's dangerous to take one particular issue, as important as fighting wars is, and to presume that that characterizes all of who you are in terms of a liberal conservative continuum. And so that's the only caution that I would make. I think that we're going to see this as the boomers now get into the Social Security years. The presumption is that we were all so liberal when we were younger, and we're going to bring these liberal attitudes unchanged into old age. I think in some cases it's true, but I think in other cases it may very well change.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Joe, so much for the call. Let's go to John from Madison. Hi, John.
Hi. I just have one general comment on how you use a self-reporting survey to determine attitude versus really just looking at what an economist would call demonstrated preference, what they actually do. And then I guess my question is, why wouldn't old people be better at changing since they typically have had to do it a lot more than young people?
It's a good point. There's no question that the connection between attitudes and behavior is by no means one-to-one. And if you're looking at, as I had somebody mention this to me a couple of days ago, it was basically along the lines of, I've been around for 80 years, I've had a lot more chance to change, and so it shouldn't be surprising that I have changed in certain ways. So I think you're right. I think you make a good point.
Mm-hmm. And thanks for the call. We will take more phone calls in a moment. We're talking this hour with Professor Nicholas Danigelis. He is chair and professor, Department of Sociology at the University of Vermont. And he's done, he's co-author of a very interesting study that looks, it's among the first studies to show over an extended period of time, people age 60 and over become more liberal at a faster rate than their younger counterparts on a number of measures, and we're looking why we have this stereotype about older people and at various facets of his and his colleagues' research. Thank you, John, for your call. We have lines open now. If you'd like to join the conversation, feel free to do just that. Call us at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Milwaukee area callers 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050, or send an email if you'd like. The email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program, we'll talk about the amount of money you need in retirement for health care costs. Professor Nicholas Danigelis is with us now, and we have an email from Paul in Hixton with a good point. I've noticed that some older people are more liberal in their views regarding health care and social programs like Social Security and Medicare. Many younger people are more conservative in their sense that they are concerned about the cost of these programs that are being shifted to their generation and future affordability. What did you notice about this in your study?
I would like to say that we found the following in the study, but the following is a blank because we did not have any questions that focused on Social Security in particular. And there was, however, a question on the government helping particular disadvantaged groups, and that included disabled individuals, also poor individuals, and there were one or two other areas. That's as close as we can get. Unfortunately, those questions did not track in a way that allowed us to use our statistical technique to compare the older and the younger individuals. One of the things that was required for our analysis was that we have a relatively linear trend in a liberal or a conservative direction. And if we didn't have that for a particular question or set of questions, we couldn't use our method. We originally started off with some 36 questions that were asked over a long enough period of time between 1972 and 2004 that would allow us to track real change and comparisons between older and younger individuals. But we lost a little over half of those items because they did not show a very clear-cut liberal or conservative trend.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some other issues like abortion, for example. But Paul, I believe it is, raises a very important question because health care, Social Security, and the like are being seen by many as wedge issues to generate conflict between the generations, you know, those people who are currently paying and will continue to be paying into Social Security and Medicare, and those who will be receiving. And I think, you know, we're going to have to address the potential as well as the real conflicts between those generations. Unfortunately, we did not have the ability to track changes in those attitudes. As important as those questions are, they just weren't part of the general social survey, or as in the case of health issues and the government helping.
And
there
wasn't
a real change.
How did you decide on the issues? Because you could have included many of them, but you looked at women and African Americans, civil liberties for unpopular
yep.
groups, euthanasia, sex outside traditional marriage. Why those set of issues?
Well, I guess the fairer question is what issues did we choose not to look at? And the answer is none. We looked at every kind. Are you able to hear me okay?
Oh, yes.
I'm getting some feedback here. We were able to track, to look at all of the attitudes questions that were asked in the general social surveys from 1972 on. And what we did was, without prejudice, if you will, pull all of those out that had a long enough time period during which the same question was asked of successive samples of respondents. So the first requirement was the question had to be asked not just 1 or 2 years, but over a number of years. And that knocked out a whole set of questions that were asked in only 1 year, perhaps, or only over a couple of years. As a result, as I just indicated a few minutes ago, we ended up with about 36 questions. That number dropped to the ones that we ended up reporting on simply because the ones that were excluded did not track in a conservative or liberal way, attitude towards abortion being one of those issues,
mm-hmm.
which has kind of been frenetic in its up and down pattern over time. So we really did not cherry pick, if you will, the questions that we were going to work with. We basically reported on all of those items for which we had enough data to do the testing that we did. And that's why we ended up with those three areas: disadvantaged groups, civil liberties, and boundaries of privacy.
Sherry is our next caller from Nina. Hi, Sherry.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm somebody who's kind of in the middle of the road. You've been talking about the younger age and the older age, and I'm coming close to 40. And looking back, I'm thinking, okay, even as a child, I was probably a little liberal because I have a brother who has Down syndrome, and just going through a small community watching how people treated each other, I think actually really formed a lot of who I am. And I wasn't necessarily raised in a liberal family, but my parents were very open-minded and kind of wide thinkers, but didn't necessarily vote liberally. But as I get older and I'm watching my patterns, I feel like I'm getting more grounded towards who I was, that kind of liberal young person, but I'm getting even more liberal as I go through life. I don't see myself getting more conservative at all, and I don't know if that's true for other people in my age bracket or not, but I can't see myself going to the conservative side at all. So for whatever that's worth, I don't know. But
well, you actually, you raise an interesting point, because your age would have put you in the younger age group, the 18 to 39-year-olds, up through 2004. And what, of course, we haven't done is look at those people between the ages of 40 and 59. What we wanted to do in our study was basically make as reasonable an age distinction as we could, so that whatever trends that we found in the older group, we could compare to another age group. Because obviously, if you just look at some of these civil liberties questions, not too many of them, but a couple of them, and if you look at the boundaries of privacy questions, you'll see more conservative trend in the older group. So we needed somebody to compare to them, and what better than the youngest people that we could find, 18 and over was the cutoff point for the survey respondents. And so you are, in a sense, represented in that younger age group, but I hear a lot of what you're saying from other people, that they have become more liberal and they assume they will continue to become more liberal as they age. I think we need to step back and ask ourselves what the context is for those changes in attitudes. For example, we're right now experiencing the relative end of a fairly conservative Republican administration in Washington, as well as the anniversary, fifth anniversary of the starting of the war in Iraq. So how much does that affect how people's opinions on a variety of issues are changing? How much did 9/11 affect people? How much did the boom years of the 90s affect people? Again, there's always more than one set of factors that's going to affect how you feel as you age. And it's very hard, very, very hard, any gerontologist listening know what I'm talking about, to disentangle the causes of those changes that exist.
Thank you so much, Sherry, for your call. Ted from Oconomowoc is next. Hi, Ted.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have an interesting perspective here. I happen to be a classmate of John McCain's.
Oh.
And, of course, I'm very sensitive about the age issue. I'm actually almost 75 years old. John McCain is far younger than I. But the interesting thing about it is that it seems not to be played up in the media is that really John McCain is a very liberal person. He's a very liberal Republican. And, I mean, combined with Feingold on a bill and Kennedy on a bill, and that seems to get missed. He's constantly labeled as being conservative, from what I hear. And so I just thought I'd just share that. Of course, I am a person who supports the war. The greatest threat that I feel this country has ever faced is the war on terror that we have now. It is more serious in some ways than even the even World War II, which was not brought to our shores other than by Japan, but not really brought to this country, whereas in the case of 9/11, that was brought to our shores.
Where did you go to school with Senator McCain, Ted?
It's a little school called the Naval Academy.
Ah.
And I graduated in the same class as he, the class of 1958.
Uh-huh.
And academically, we're very similar. We're sort of in the bottom third of the class.
Thank you so much for the call. Interesting point, Professor.
Well, one comment that I would have with regard to what Ted said at the beginning is that the question of the liberal positions that Senator McCain has taken, especially the high-profile joining together with your Wisconsin Senator Feingold on campaign financing and the like, has tended to kind of go sub rosa, if you will. The question is, why is that happening? I think here we're getting into very serious, heavy politics and positioning for a variety of interest group votes, including the very important conservative right. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds in the general election with regard to a variety of issues. But Ted is correct. There's no question, based on his record, that Senator McCain has been liberal on a number of issues and has certainly appeared to be representative of the liberal wing of the Republican Party. Indeed, that's why he got so much grief from the conservative wing just a month or two ago. And now it seems we may be looking at a transformation, although I suspect he's resting and just waiting for Senators Clinton and Obama to beat each other up.
And we are out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. What an interesting study. Thanks, Professor.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Professor Nicholas Danielis, he is Chair and Professor of the Department of Sociology at the University of Vermont. And the research looks at this long-held belief about older people being more rigid. If you want the full study, you can find it in the October 2007 edition of the American Sociological Review. The article is titled Population Aging, Intracohort Aging, and Sociological Attitudes based on general social survey data from 25 surveys between 1972 and 2004. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. Thanks as well to Rhonda for on-air production here in Milwaukee, and thanks for all of your calls, everyone. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll continue with more Wednesday conversation. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.